This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusa, in for Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Here's some common plot lines from soap operas. Love triangles, long-lost siblings, the big frame-up, amnesia, and my personal favorite, returning from the dead. But then, there's this.
The doctor I saw last year said I had problems with my blood pressure, my cholesterol, too much fat around my belly, blah, blah, blah. And then he said I might have something called metabolic syndrome, and he wanted to do more tests.
Did you do the tests?
No, I didn't want them to poke me again. What, for more bad news?
Now that is an English translation of a Spanish language telenovela, one that was used by researchers from the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. They screened it to adults in Lawrence as part of a program that took a community-based approach to improving the health of Latinos at high risk of developing diabetes. Joining us with more is Rachel Zimmerman, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Meghna.
So first of all, tell me, why Lawrence?
Well, Lawrence is a primarily low-income city. It's about 60% Latino, and only around half of the population is fluent in English, and the prevalence of diabetes in Lawrence is about double that of whites in the rest of Massachusetts. So it's a pretty high-risk community for developing this disease.
And you also reported that along with the factors that you just mentioned, that there's a very high rate of obesity there as well.
In this study, everyone was considered obese, which means their body mass index was 35 or above, yes.
So as you said, it seems like every, or at least many possible factors that go into developing diabetes, this community had a lot of them.
That's right.
So Rachel, in your reporting, you make the point of saying that the researchers really tried to meet the community where it is, individuals where they are. And that was the distinguishing factor here. So what did you mean by that?
Well, they took folks on tours of the supermarket to show them where the highly processed bad foods are, where the produce is, which you can eat. And they created these color-coded food guides, which sort of characterize foods as red, yellow, or green, like traffic lights. Obviously, red were foods to never eat, yellow in moderation, and green you could eat fairly freely.
So rather than telling people you need to go to the gym three times a day and cut your calories by, 200 calories a day, which is something that we might hear usually from a doctor, these were messages that were really tailored to fit into the cultural context of families living in Lawrence?
Exactly.
Well, Rachel, if you stand by for a moment, I want to add another voice into the conversation. Dr. Ira O'Keen is a professor of medicine and director of preventive cardiology at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's also the director of community engagement research at UMass Medical School. Dr. O'Keen, welcome to Radio Boston.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Wonderful to have you. So let me ask you, the study or the effort sounds very fascinating in Lawrence, this attempt to meet people where they are. But what were the results? Was it effective?
Yes, the results were quite interesting in that the weight loss we achieved, which was real, but it was very modest. It was 2.5 pounds compared to a usual care group. And yet that 2.5 pound weight loss was associated with very significant improvements in markers of diabetes.
So this is 2.5 pounds over an entire year?
It was over a one-year period of time, right.
So that seems kind of counterintuitive that such a minor bit of weight loss could actually map to improvements in diabetic indicators?
Well, there are two things to say about that. The first is that we know that there are populations around the world, hundreds of millions of people, who are genetically very sensitive to becoming diabetic, with only modest increases in weight. So that's true of many of the Asian populations. It's true of Native Americans here, and it's true of some of the Latino populations.
And when you say that there were major changes in diabetic indicators, what particularly did you see?
So we were looking at two things in particular. The first is a measurement called hemoglobin A1C, which is basically a three-month marker for what your blood sugar is. The other thing we were looking at was something called insulin resistance. And it turns out that adult onset diabetes, which is 90% of diabetics and very related to being overweight in addition to having a genetic predisposition, is really not an insulin deficiency disease like childhood diabetes often is. But in fact, the cells of the body become resistant to the action of insulin. And so the body's actually making more insulin than is normal, and that's called insulin resistance.
And Dr. O'Keen, Rachel raised a very interesting question in her report, and that is this difference between medical weight loss versus cosmetic weight loss. Because as we were talking about before, losing 2.5 pounds in a year just seems like nothing, but apparently it has a significant medical impact.
It has an enormous medical impact. And for most things that we measure, for most risk factors, whether it's blood pressure or cholesterol, the patient and I see things the same way. We see a number. But when we talk about weight, we see things differently. I see a number and the patient's looking into a mirror. So it's important to understand the difference between medical weight loss and cosmetic weight loss. You may say, I need to lose 30 pounds, which turns out to be usually very unrealistic. But in fact, for medical improvement, we've known for a long time that 5 or 10 pounds will improve your diabetes or your diabetes risk, will lower your blood pressure, will make your cholesterol better. It'll have all sorts of really, really good outcomes.
Now, Rachel, you spoke with other researchers about this community-based approach to preventing or attempting to prevent diabetes. What did they say?
Right. I talked to a few other folks, mainly because, to me, 2.5 pounds over a year, it was hard to believe that that would really make any sort of clinical difference. And the folks I spoke to who were not involved in this study said, actually, in this population, essentially every little bit helps. So even that modest weight loss could prevent this illness. Just to give this some context, there was a major diabetes study that in 2002 was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Completely different population, well-educated, middle class, motivated to be in the study. And that study found that these kind of lifestyle interventions, diet, exercise, could cut by nearly 60% the pre-diabetics risk of developing the disease. And these people lost much more weight. I believe it was 15 pounds. So in a sense, that study said, okay, we know how to do this. And so the Lawrence study, of course, was in a much different population. So although we know how to do this, what we're not sure of is how to do this in the highest risk group or how best to do it.
Oh, well, Dr. O'Keen, let me ask you about that then. As Rachel was saying, do you see the potential areas for improvement in terms of the community-based approach you took in Lawrence?
Yeah, so that's exceptionally important. The reality is that if we really want to improve the health of the population, we need to work with populations, with communities, with people where they live. This study went well because most of the people working on the study were of the community.
On the other hand, if I may, I mean, in Rachel's reporting, she noted that even with your culturally tailored approach, for example, you had participation drop off quite dramatically in some aspects of the study. There were group sessions where participation began in the 60% plus range, and then by the end of the study, barely 20% of the people were coming. So it seemed like there were even challenges there with the culturally tailored approach.
That is absolutely correct. This is challenging. It is not easy to get people to change their behavior. People have real lives and real problems, things going on, and we're not always their highest priority.
And I think the most interesting thing for me about this is just how tough this problem is. It's hard for rich people, it's hard for poor people, and it's really hard if you've got this triple whammy of obstacles. You're already obese, you don't speak the language, you're low income, and you don't even know where to begin. So it's a really hard problem.
Dr. Ira O'Keen, Director of Community Engagement Research at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
And Rachel Zimmerman, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, thank you.
Thanks, Magna.
Find a link to Rachel's article on our website, radioboston.org. Tomorrow on the show, MSNBC's Chris Matthews and his meticulously researched new biography of his hero, John F. Kennedy.
Let's get ready for some hardball. Plus, if you're looking for some out-of-control Christmas lights, there's a pair of houses in Saugus we can tell you about.
I don't like taking it down, but I enjoy putting it up.
That's all tomorrow on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangleatboston.com. I'm Adam Ragusea. Anthony Brooks is back tomorrow.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again then for more Radio Boston.